WFAE streaming is sponsored by Corporate Information Technologies, a local IT company assisting business and taking a proactive approach to technology. CIT, let us show you how good IT can be. corp-infotech.com.
This is Charlotte Talks. I'm Mike Collins. Just like air, chemicals are all around us. Chemicals are in our clothes, our furniture, the food we eat, the water we drink, the product we spray on our lawn to make the grass green. We use chemicals to clean with, to make our cars run better, and we use them in the defense of the country. Modern life would not be modern without chemicals. In the 1930s, the DuPont Corporation adopted the slogan, "Better Living Through Chemistry." Back then, that probably sounded like a modern point of view, as the world headed optimistically into a new and scientific era. Today, we're a little less naive. Experience has told us that, as with anything, there are trade-offs. So today, we delve into the role of chemistry in some of society's biggest issues as we welcome the president of the American Chemical Society and the director of the Wisconsin Initiative for Science Literacy, Dr. Bassem Shakashiri. He joins us by phone. Welcome to the program, Doctor.
I'm very happy to be with you, and good morning to everyone.
And with us in the studio is Lee Kinberg, the founder, a founder of the Charlotte Area Science Network, which celebrates its 10th anniversary, and they're bringing science to Charlotte. In fact, they're bringing Dr. Shakashiri to Charlotte next Thursday. In her day job, Lee Kinberg is director of environment and sustainability for North America for Maersk Line. That's a shipping line that does all kinds of transport all over the world. Thank you for being here as well.
And thank you, Mike. And
we'll put the information up about your 10th anniversary celebration and Dr. Shakashiri's appearance next Thursday, not this Thursday, next Thursday, on our website at WFAE.org. Let me begin with you, Dr. Shakashiri. You spend a lot of time, conducting what are described as fun chemistry presentations for school kids. You oversee a website called SciFun.org, and you're internationally known for your leadership in promoting excellence in science education. Given all of that and all the things that you put, all the energy that you put forward and all of the energy that Lee Kinberg puts forward in this area, why are American students falling behind and seem to be completely disinterested in science?
Mike, you know, we live in a very beautiful chemical world. As you mentioned, everything around us is made of chemicals. And my goal is always to help everyone develop a sense of appreciation of the role of chemistry in our daily lives. Your question about students falling behind on test scores is of some concern to us, of serious concern to us. Performance on examinations, on tests, is one telltale of how we as a society address important challenges that we face. But I just want to say flat out, we live in the most advanced scientific and technological society in the history of humankind. And in the United States, we have many, many pockets of excellence in education, in school systems, colleges and universities. Graduate programs are the envy of the world in terms of what we do. And yet these telltales that pop up that show students from other countries performing better than our students, especially at the secondary level, at middle school level, are of concern to us. I say this because it's not really the most important thing to be number one. What is most important is to make sure that we are providing high-quality education to our citizens so that we can sustain the quality of life that we enjoy in this advanced scientific and technological society. So education is a key to progress. Education is the key to progress. Education is how we combat ignorance. And I speak about education now in all areas, not just in science. We use these markers as telltales to tell us that there is something we should be paying more serious attention to in our school systems, despite the fact that our schools in many, many areas are outstanding and excellent. We have to empower the teachers to do what they are asked to do on behalf of society, to inspire youngsters, to cultivate and to help them improve their curiosity and to nurture that curiosity. So I'm very optimistic, as you hear me say, Mike. But there are issues that we should pay attention to.
I'm actually genuinely surprised to hear you say that, because I've had other scientists on the program who were not as optimistic. And if you listen to the political dialogue from both sides, you get the impression that our middle and high schools are failing our students miserably, particularly in the areas of science and math. And although politicians will tout, as you have touted, the excellence of our universities, particularly in the areas of science and math, they're being the envy of the world, that most of the students in those programs are from other parts of the world who are then dismissed to go back home, leaving us with not enough people to do the task at hand. You're saying that is not the case.
I'm saying that we have a situation where we enjoy a very high level of standard of living is very, very high for us. And that this is the result of advances in science and in technology. And I'm saying that this has happened because of the generosity and the wisdom of the American people through their taxes to support institutions of higher education, to support secondary and elementary schools, to support colleges and universities. I'm not saying that we don't have issues to pay attention to. I do not want to be sounding like an alarmist. Mm-hmm. I do want to say that we have great capability to do better than we are doing now. But the better is not measured only by test scores on international comparison tests. The better is measured by how the product and the outcome of our educational system truly helps society. Mike, you mentioned the political discourse. I'd just like to make an observation about that, and I'll just keep it as an observation. We, as an advanced society, deserve much better than the political rhetoric that we hear on the air, especially during an election year. We deserve better than that, and we must insist that our political leaders and our future elected leaders treat us with respect.
What would better sound like? What would they be talking about if they were doing, and what would they be saying if they were doing what you wished they would do?
I would like a respectful discourse. I would like discourse about issues, discourse about the true grand challenges that we face in America and we face around the globe, because the planet is threatened by many aspects that are the result of human activity. And I'm specifically referring to climate change here. I can talk about that a little bit more in a moment. But I just would like the discourse to be respectful. Name-calling is not going to solve anything. Identifying what the issues are and articulating solutions, to me, is the proper role of a leader.
Lee Kinberg is in the studio with us, and she is one of the founders of the Charlotte Area Science Network. And I got to tell you, I had never heard of this organization before a couple of days ago, but you've been in business and operating for years. So tell me a little bit about what the Charlotte Area Science Network does.
Well, Mike, we're a group of local scientists who believe science is beneficial and interesting, and we really work in three areas. One is to educate the public about science. So we've advocated having the science pages that we now have in The Observer, for example.
You're responsible for that?
Well, we advocated it. I don't think we're solely responsible for that.
That's once a week for people who don't take the paper. It's pretty doggone interesting,
actually. Oh, yeah. I spend more time on the Monday paper than I do on other other days. We also believe in science education, so we support science in the schools. We did revitalize the science fairs so that students here have the opportunity to go to the international science fairs. Mm. And then we build working networks among scientists in business and education here within the community so that we can come together and do things like bring in national speakers like Dr. Shakashiri. Now, he was actually, before we were even founded, that was sort of a seminal event for us. We came together and brought him in to do several things, and I think we ran his legs off that first time, December of 2001. when he came in and did his Science is Fun presentations, everywhere from a science club at the Bethlehem Center to UNCC to community talks, and talked and connected with every one of those audiences.
Are you seeing in those 10 years that you've been in business and in the 10 years that you've been working with students and with scientists and with organizations and with newspapers, and are you seeing an uptick in interest in terms of the numbers of students who are now participating in things like science fairs, or an uptick in competence among those young people?
You know, some of the projects that we've seen in those science fairs are just phenomenal. But the first year, I think we had maybe 70 students, because the science fairs had disappeared from the area. And this is a regional science fair, so students from schools all over the region were able to participate. Now we've got well over 500 kids who participate, and every year we send students to the International Intel Science Search.
We're talking about science, its influence in our lives. Particularly, we'll get to chemistry and its influence in our lives as we go through the hour here on Charlotte Talks on WFAE. We'll get right back to our conversation with the president of the American Chemical Society in just a moment. But first, we have to take care of some business. Did you know that over 90% of the money that we get to pay for Charlotte Talks, Morning Edition, and all of your other favorite programs on WFAE comes from listeners like you and from local businesses? Do your part right now to pay for the news and conversation you enjoy and depend on. Call 704-549-9000 right now and make a pledge.
And good morning. I'm Dale Speer, and this is the WFAE Fall Pledge Drive. We're here today to raise money to help pay for the quality programming you've come to expect on WFAE. Our ability to do this depends on you. You can become a special part of this public radio community by making a financial contribution right now. Doing as Mike says, call 704-549-9000 or pledging at WFAE.org. And joining me in the studio this morning is Roger Sorrow. Good morning, Roger.
Hey, Dale. Giving to WFAE enriches our community. Your financial contribution today will not only pay for the news coverage you listen to, it also provides a valuable resource for intelligent conversation throughout the Charlotte region. A gift of just a dollar or two a week will make a really big difference paying for the news and the reports that you rely on. The process takes just a couple of minutes, but the benefits last a long time. Please consider calling, and then do call 704-549-9000, or it's really easy to contribute online at WFAE.org.
You know, you turn to 90.7 in NPR because it's the spot on the radio dial where articulate, knowledgeable people debate about issues that you care about. It's where you hear fresh ideas that challenge and entertain you. It's with your financial support, though, that WFAE, that you can make a difference to WFAE. A gift of a dollar or two a week is all that it takes to keep WFAE and NPR on the radio, in your life, and available to everyone here. Call now, 704-549-9000, or pledge your support online at WFAE.org.
We hope that there's intellectual stimulation in the programming. We think you'll agree with us that there is, especially in a topic like this where we're talking about the way chemistry can really affect a lot of the everyday issues in our lives. We bring you some humor. We provide community discussion. All of those things make it really a better place for everyone in the community. If we've been successful in doing that, then we ask you to consider making a financial pledge right now. Please call 704-549-9000, or you can donate online at WFAE.org.
We'd like you to do it right now. It's important for you to become members and supporters of this public radio station during these public radio drives, the fundraising drives that we have. You know, we only come to you just a few days a year and ask for your support. In fact, this time we had planned a 10-day drive. We asked you to contribute early, and many of you did so much that we were able to eliminate half of this drive. So we only had really 4.5 days. We had about a half a day on Saturday, and then we've been on the air asking you for your membership support since then. And we have just 2 days left. So today is the penultimate day, and then we've got the last day tomorrow. So please call us now, 704-549-9000. We know you've been meaning to do it. We know you meant to do it to help eliminate days of fundraising. Now we know you mean to do it before the fundraiser ends, so please do it now, 704-549-9000.
No better time than the current time. We also want to remind you that WFAE is a partnership. We have all the wonderful members who support our programming and also businesses and organizations. And we want to thank Queen's University of Charlotte, offering 10 master's degrees in business, communication, creative writing, education, and nursing. October 25th, discover Queen's graduate programs registration at queens.edu. And Hendrick Acura in Charlotte. The TSX Sport Wagon features leather-trimmed interior, sports sedan performance, fuel efficiency, and 66 cubic feet of cargo space. HendrickAcura.com. The number by which you become a member of WFAE is a very simple one and a very important one, 704-549-9000. Or you can make your pledge securely online at WFAE.org. Do remember that listeners are the most important source of WFAE's funding. Listener support allows us to bring you Morning Edition and All Things Considered. And, of course, Charlotte Talks with Mike Collins, along with the Diane Rehm Show. 704-549-9000. We ask you to make your pledge right now. Thanks.
It's Charlotte Talks on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE and 90.3 WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. We're talking about science, and particularly as we go into the rest of the program, about chemistry and its influence in our daily life, with a couple of people who know it well. Dr. Bassam Shakashiri, president of the American Chemical Society, director of the Wisconsin Initiative for Science Literacy. He's on the phone with us, and in advance of an appearance here on October 25th at UNC Charlotte. Information about that on our website. And Lee Kinberg is here, one of the founders of the Charlotte Area Science Network and director of Environment and Sustainability for North America for Maersk Line. We were talking a bit about education and science in the last segment, and Lee Kinberg, you used to be on the Charlotte-Mecklenburg School Board, and you have a doctorate in all of this. Talk to me about how Charlotte-Mecklenburg does in the area of science.
You know, we have some really inspiring science teachers here in Charlotte-Mecklenburg. We don't have enough of them, but we really have some great ones, and I just wish everyone could have a science teacher as great as Dr. Shakashiri or Cindy Moss, who has been with Charlotte-Mecklenburg Schools for many years. Some of the other teachers that I've seen in Charlotte-Mecklenburg, including some retirees who've spent a career in industry and then gone back into teaching, are doing some amazing things with some students here. But you were right that the teach to the test, originally the tests were only in science and math, in reading and math. And so science was a little neglected. That has now been corrected because there are tests in science. But we do have to bring that balance.
Dr. Shakashiri, I've not seen you work your magic in a classroom or in front of a group of young people, but I have seen photographs of you doing it. They look a little bit like Ask Mr. Wizard, to be honest, but I'm told that you use glowing liquids and exploding balloons and other phenomena to get kids piqued, to get their curiosity piqued about science. Obviously, that's fun. You get the child's interest, but they also have to be able to do the math and understand complex ideas if they want to pursue this as a career. Does that ability to understand complex ideas, to do the math, follow once you, as a demonstrator of things science, give them that appetite for it? Or do we have to prepare them more adequately before they can get that appetite? Because if they don't have the understanding, they'll be disappointed when they try to do what you've done. Which comes first, the chicken or the egg?
Oh, they're together. We have to be prepared all the time. We have to do it before an event, during an event, after an event. That's what I was saying before. This whole thing is a process. It's not just a single occurrence. And one of the what makes me really feel good about this anniversary of the Charlotte Area Science Network is that it's still going on. And Lee and others are doing an outstanding job in cultivating new interest. You said you just heard about it recently. Well, Mike, where have you been?
We'll have to correct that.
it's not just Mike. I mean, this is why we're engaged in a continuous and continual process, so that we are strong advocates for education. As I said already, education is the most critical ingredient for enabling effective collaboration among teachers, scientists, enlightened policymakers, so that we have a science-literate public. But I want to pay tribute to Mr. Wizard, the late Don Herbert. I learned a lot from Mr. Wizard. When I first came to the United States from my native Lebanon, 55 years ago, in 1957, September 17th actually is the date we arrived, I watched on television Mr. Wizard. I learned a lot from him. I learned about the importance of being effective in communicating the science that he and the youngsters were doing. In fact, I dedicated one of my books to Mr. Wizard. I knew him well, and his wife as well. Mr. Wizard and his approach is what I follow, and that is to be engaging and to make sure that the process continues after whatever experiment is done. He was, and I am, a strong advocate of hands-on and minds-on experiences.
You are the president. I'm sorry, go ahead, finish.
The total engagement in what happens in the classroom and outside the classroom. Mike, has fall arrived now in Charlotte?
It's beginning. I'm looking out the window and the trees are beginning to change.
We're all curious. We all ask questions at all ages. Why do the leaves change color in the fall? Why is the sky blue? Why is it that when you walk on a pavement where some gasoline has spilled and the pavement is wet, you see beautiful colors? And why is it that you see beautiful colors, the same beautiful colors you see in a soap solution? Are these colors related to each other? We all full of curiosity, and it's incumbent upon all of us to nurture this curiosity in the classroom and outside the classroom. We're talking about teachers, but I want to bring the parents in and the family into the picture, because it is the parental guidance and the parental responsibility that really makes what learning fun. It's not just science is fun. It's that learning is fun. And when I talk about fun, Mike, I'm talking about fun in the best sense of the word. I'm not talking about cheap thrills. I'm talking about being intellectually stimulated and being emotionally rewarded as well.
Let's talk about chemistry before we run too much longer into this program, because we'll run out of time. We won't have talked about it at all. And both of you are into the world of chemistry. You're the president of the American Chemical Society, for which the slogan is Chemistry for Life. And in recent years, I think I'm right about this, people have become suspicious of science and maybe a little afraid of chemistry. I know that we've done a lot of programs with people who say, get all those chemicals out of your house. Get all those cleaning products that have chemicals in them out of your house. Get all those pest control products out of your house. Never touch them. Never get them near you. They're bad for you. Only eat organic food. Do this, that, or the other thing. Don't use anything on your lawn. It's bad, 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 bad. It's got chemicals in it. You say that chemicals are making our lives better, safer, easier. Why the disconnect here?
The disconnect, I feel strongly that disconnect is superficial. We are made of chemicals. What goes on inside our bodies is nothing but a series of biochemical reactions. The medicine we take when we are sick is a mixture of chemicals. Our lives now benefit a great deal from the beautiful chemical world, the advances we have made. But there is, as you say, this fear of chemicals. That's because if we are not well informed and well educated about the safe and proper handling of chemicals, they can cause problems. There's no doubt about it. Chemicals can be dangerous, can be hazardous, but not all chemicals. The air that we breathe is a mixture of usually good chemicals, depending on how much we pollute the air. That's what I say usually, that's what it usually refers to. So education in chemistry as part of education in science, as part of the general education, is very critical. We live in a chemical world. Everything. You started the program by saying we live in a chemical world. We do. Let's enjoy it. Let's learn about it. Let's learn about the safe and proper disposal of chemicals that are harmful to us and harmful to the environment. Let's learn about the great progress that chemistry has made and also the consequences that come along as a result of the Industrial Revolution, the consequences of putting chemicals in the air that affect the climate.
Let me hear your point of view, your take on this, Dr. Kimber.
Well, you know, science is the process of understanding how things work And we understand a lot more than we did 40 years ago. You know, initially we thought DDT was the end of the best thing in the world. And it does have some advantages. But we also then began to understand that it had environmental consequences. And so the more we understand, the better choices we can make. And that's why it's so important to always keep moving forward in science and not just memorizing what was known in the past.
Now, you work for Maersk, and Maersk is a shipping line. You do land, rail, sea shipping of products and things all over the world. But you're the environment. You're the director of environment and sustainability. Why does a shipping line need one of you?
Well, we have environmental impacts in our operations just like any other company does, and just like we in our homes have environmental impacts. And we want to be sure that we understand those environmental impacts and that we are making smart choices and reducing those environmental impacts, particularly where they have the greatest impact on people.
Now, the American Chemical Society, Dr. Shakashiri, is not an advocacy or a lobby group. I know, however, that you work to promote science education. And in effect, isn't that lobbying the government to do better in the area of science? Doesn't that make you a lobbying group in a way?
The American Chemical Society is a scientific, educational, professional society. We are a learned society. We are advocates. I want to emphasize this, Mike. We are advocates for quality education, for quality research. We are advocates for progress in society. We are advocates for the safe handling of chemicals. So, yes, we lobby in that sense, in that general and very profound sense.
Give me some ideas on how chemicals have made our life better, safer, easier, because we have had a number of environmentalists on this program and household environmentalists who encourage us to rid our household environments of everything that's even possibly chemical, right down to taking out the plywood in the subfloor because it has formaldehyde in it. So tell us how chemicals have made our lives better, easier, safer.
This year is the 50th anniversary of Silent Spring, the book that Rachel Carson did, and she called attention to the effect of chemicals on nature. I admire the late Rachel Carson. She was truly a scientist citizen. Chemicals are essential to life. Chemicals are important for daily activities. Everything that we do is related to chemistry and to chemicals. And we have to learn how to properly handle them and dispose of them. You know, too much of something may not be a good thing at all. Yes, there are a variety of chemicals in household products that we use daily. As long as we use them safely and we know enough about what to mix, what not to mix, how much to use, or when to use eye protection if we're doing something that might cause the formation of a substance that irritates the eyes or something that we might breathe. We just have to, that's the whole point. That's the whole point of being.
What about the unknowns? Because Dr. Kinberg just mentioned that we thought DDT was great when it first came out, and it certainly did the job of killing insects that we didn't want around, but we also later on found out that there were bad effects to DDT. There now seems to be a precipitate rise in the incidence of autism, and some feel that maybe it's due to chemicals, either in the mother or in the household or in the environment outside the house, that may be leading to a rise in autism. Hasn't been concluded that is the case, but people are theorizing that may be one of the causes. And there may be other things that we don't yet know about that may be being caused by the use of chemicals in our environment. Dr. Kinberg?
Well, you know, understanding how the brain works chemically is leading to all kinds of new treatments and understandings of conditions that we did not have in the past. We haven't licked the Alzheimer's one yet. We haven't licked autism yet. But there are others that we are now able to treat because of those chemicals that we call pharmaceuticals.
Okay, but what about the actual chemistry of our bodies? As we understand chemistry more, we can understand the chemistry in our bodies and then maybe come up with cures for or things that abate the problems in our bodies because we understand the chemistry of it?
Absolutely. Genomics is really looking at the chemistry of how these things work. You're looking at the chemistry of enzymes and how they make the body work. And understanding how those things work then can allow us to treat conditions. It can also help us live healthier lifestyles when we understand what does this food do and that food does not. Mm-hmm. You know, even baking and brewing
are chemistry.
Yeah, yes.
We've talked about that on our food shows. So even if we wanted to, it would seem to me that it may not even be possible in the 21st century, unless you want to go and live in a third world country, to live without the influence of chemicals. Correct? I mean, it's in the desk we're sitting at. It's in the microphone you're talking into. It's in that coffee cup you're holding in your hand. Correct?
Oh, and coffee is a good thing too. But actually, roasting coffee is a very complex chemical reaction, and the way you control that roasting and the chemicals that come off of it then determine the flavors that you'll get.
Is that one of the areas that we miss? I don't recall ever talking about this in science, in chemistry, in biology, ever in class. Now, maybe I missed that day in class, but I don't recall ever being talked about that the influence of these scientific phenomena moment by moment in our lives. Is that something we're missing in the world of education?
Mike, you're right that we need to be very careful about the curriculum design and what is presented in the classroom and what is discussed and what's also discussed outside the classroom. But you know, the whole point, I think, of the last few minutes here, maybe longer, is the word chemical. Somehow I get the impression from what you're saying that the word chemical is pejorative. It isn't.
All right, let me just jump in here for just a moment and say we're talking about chemicals and science and its influence on our everyday lives here on Charlotte Talks on WFAE. Interesting discussions like the one we're having this morning about how chemicals affect our lives are one of the many reasons you tune to WFAE. You've come to rely on Charlotte Talks to help keep you connected to the community. And during our fall membership campaign, we want to remind you that WFAE relies on your financial support in order to continue the show for another year. Join us right now with a contribution at 704-549-9000 or online at WFAE.org. And thanks.
And good morning, I'm Dale Speer, and this is our fall membership campaign. With the internet, your media choices continue to multiply, and the more noise that there is in the media, the more you know you're going to want news that you can trust. That's why it's important for you to support WFAE and NPR today. Your gift ensures that you will always have a place to get the news without all that noise. We hope we don't have that noise. We hope we're a trusted source. We believe that we are. You've told us that in cards and letters and surveys. Call now with your gift at 704-549-9000. Please invest in public radio and give as generously as you can. With more details on our fund drive, here's Roger Sorrow.
Hey, Dale. And one of those details is our way to make your pledge if you'd like to go online. You can go to WFAE.org, make a quick, simple, fast, secure pledge. You'll be helping to pay for Charlotte Talks and Morning Edition and the Diane Rehm Show. Or you can just call us at 704-549-9000 and make a contribution in any amount. The important thing is, as we get ready to wrap up this fund drive, tomorrow's the last day, the important thing is that you make your pledge. You'll be doing your part to keep public radio strong here in Charlotte and, by extension, throughout the country.
And we'd also like to let you know that because of WFAE's coverage of last night's presidential debate, we'll be re-airing our Charlotte Talks interview with Libertarian gubernatorial candidate Barbara Howe. That will be tonight at 9 o'clock. Mm-hmm. So we want to make sure that you did hear the replay of that interview with the gubernatorial candidate. You know, you count on us to give you accurate, timely information that allows you to make informed decisions. You depend on NPR and WFAE to bring commentary that informs and enlightens. You also appreciate the fact that you hear numerous viewpoints that widen your understanding of a particular issue. We can do that, but we can only do it when people like you, listeners, become members of 90.7 and members of public radio. Call us right now, 704-549-9000, or pledge online at WFAE.org.
Looking for a great vacation getaway with beaches and surf, mountains and redwoods, the lush beauty of vineyards, and a dazzling selection of award-winning wineries and restaurants? Well, call 704-549-9000 or go to WFAE.org and you can enter. Airfare for two and accommodations for 5 days and nights. Complete this wine country package. No contribution is necessary. However, we do hope you'll consider making a pledge. Good luck and thanks for your support.
And our thanks to James McElroy and Deal, a law firm providing litigation and business counsel to companies and individuals for more than 50 years. Details at jmdlaw.com.
It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE and WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. We're talking about chemistry and chemicals in our daily lives with Dr. Bassem Shakashiri, the president of the American Chemical Society. Lee Kinberg is also with us, former member of the Charlotte-Mecklenburg School Board, a founder of the Charlotte Area Science Network, and director of Environment and Sustainability for North America, Maersk Line. Jake tweets about something we were talking about in the last segment. He says, I think the pushback of chemicals in the house and any link to autism stems from an ignorance of science and chemistry. And you're nodding in agreement there somewhat, Dr. Kinberg.
Well, you know, science is about let's find out.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what we're trying to do in botany and in zoology, astronomy to zoology, if we want to go A to Z.
Mm-hmm.
And it goes through medicine, and it goes through dentistry and computer science. All of those are sciences, but they can't stand still. And we are constantly taking on the next challenges, and in particular those that Dr. Shakashiri mentioned earlier, those grand challenges.
Right. Well, Dr. Shakashiri, I know that the American Chemical Society has something called a Green Chemistry Institute, and I'll bet you to many people, green chemistry sounds like an oxymoron. So what is green about chemicals?
Oh, it's not an oxymoron, but that's a good way to start the conversation about it. The Green Chemistry Institute is a part of our effort to learn more about how to handle chemicals safely and how to carry out chemical reactions with better efficiency in the laboratory and manufacture, better efficiency, and to be also very sharply focused on the discharge of chemicals into the environment so that we are protective of the environment. So green chemistry, you know what's going on in the leaves that you're looking at now, Mike? That's chemistry that's going on there. It's green, it's safe, and we have the ability to control the chemical reactions. As we do more research, we develop better ability to control chemical reactions so that they are carried out safely and environmentally friendly, and that's what the Green Chemistry Institute in part is about.
Now, industry uses a lot of chemicals in large-scale ways, and Dr. Kinberg, I believe it's correct that you used to work for Hearst Celanese, and they certainly use a lot of chemicals in what it is that they do. How closely do companies like that and others that use chemicals or even that manufacture chemicals, how closely do they work with the government to ensure both the safety of their workers, of their products, and in containing any environmental dangers that might result from chemical spills or product spills?
We know around 1988, the U.S. EPA put together something called, and actually the U.S. Congress put together something called the Community Right to Know laws, where chemical companies had to actually measure what they were putting into the environment, and it was published. And it was amazing how much learning happened after that because it hadn't been measured that way before.
Do companies feel these requirements, these regulations are onerous, that they hold back free enterprise, that they cost too much money, that they're making us uncompetitive in the world today?
I would have to say that the answer is all of the above. However, it's also that those understandings force us to make better decisions. For example, to find less hazardous chemicals or to recover, say, raw materials that might have been being lost. So there are trade-offs there. There are both good things and bad things about that cooperation and that dynamic tension that happens with the regulators and with the environmental advocate organizations.
There was a presidential debate last night. Science did, in fact, I did come up in this debate last night to a very small degree. I don't know that chemistry per se came up, but the Chemical Society has posed science questions to both of the candidates. What kind of questions did you ask?
Questions that relate to the support that the next president will provide to scientific research, to education, questions that relate to regulations that you're alluding to, questions that relate to the level of funding available to conduct world-class research at our universities and national laboratories. Those are the basic questions that were asked. And we got good responses. They're published on our website.
Yes, I read them. And I got to tell you, Barack Obama is succinct. His answers are always much shorter than Mitt Romney's, except for one or two exceptions. One of the questions you asked was about climate change. President Obama said, climate change is one of the biggest issues of this generation. That's a quote. And then went on to describe his administration's efforts to work on different paths to different kinds of energy. Mitt Romney said, and I quote, "I am not a scientist myself, but my best assessment of the data is that the world is getting warmer, that human activity contributes to that warming, and that policymakers should therefore consider the risk of negative consequences. However, there remains a lack of scientific consensus on the issue, on the extent of the warming, the extent of the human contribution, and the severity of the risk. And I believe we must support continued debate and investigation within the scientific community." That's Mitt Romney's quote. So he said something that some Republicans would not, that the world is getting warmer and that we are contributing to that. But he hedged a bit. So what is your reaction to that comment?
Mike, if between now and the time I die, which I hope is not in the near future, I do not succeed in having an intelligent conversation with you or with my neighbor about climate change, the consequences can be catastrophic. There is no doubt whatsoever among scientists that the climate is changing and it's warming up. There's no doubt about that. There's no doubt that this change is due to natural causes, but there is no doubt whatsoever it's due to human activity. All you have to do is look at what the levels of carbon dioxide are in the air since the Industrial Revolution. It's a huge increase, and that's due because we use fossil fuels and we're not careful enough about our usage of these fuels to meet our energy demand.
So when politicians and policymakers say that the extent that there remains a lack of scientific consensus on the issue, they are wrong?
Mike, you're not going to draw me into a political position here, but I just want
to... I'm drawing you into a scientific position. Are they wrong, scientifically?
That's an incorrect statement.
Okay.
That's incorrect. The evidence is overwhelming. The evidence is frightening. I don't want to use scare tactics here, but I already gave you the example about the statement about the consequences can be catastrophic because the Earth is warming up because of human activity. Carbon dioxide cannot be absorbed as much by the oceans, and if it does, it causes a change in the acidity level in the oceans. It has severe consequences. Ice caps will melt and so on. Mike, I am not a gloom and doom person. I am a scientist. I care about the understanding of science by my fellow scientists, but also by the public at large. We're all in this together. It isn't that someone is wrong and someone is right.
So is there a solution, an affordable solution, that will not cripple our economy or send us back to the Middle Ages, that we can apply in enough time to make a difference scientifically?
If we take responsibility for our use of energy, our careful use of energy, and become quite a bit less wasteful in what we use in terms of energy, and then we have a fighting chance. But Mike, this is a global issue. It's not a U.S. issue by itself, even though the U.S. consumes the largest fraction of energy in the whole world. This is a global issue. The third world countries, they're building coal-fired plants on a daily basis, polluting the environment. They want to have the same standards of living that we have in the United States. And I don't blame them. I encourage them. But that's not the way to go about it. That's why we need to educate ourselves about chemicals, their consequences, their good uses, and the bad aspects that relate to them. This is very, very important. This is what science literacy is all about. This is what we need to empower teachers to work with. This is what we need the community to be aware of. It is for our economic benefit. It is for our cultural benefit that we become informed and we collectively make the right choices rather than be persuaded and make choices based on ignorance.
In answers to the American Chemical Society's questions to the two presidential candidates, both candidates touted their belief in federal funding for research which actually surprised me. Among other things, President Obama mentioned his $90 billion investment in clean energy. That, among other things, came up in Mitt Romney's response. He characterized that as $90 billion the president used in a failed attempt to promote his green energy agenda. Now, you're both scientists. Is that a fair characterization of money used for research and development? Because not all research proves to be fruitful.
Mike, when we do research, we don't know what we're going to find out. That's why we do it. That's what research is all about. We have inklings as to what we're going to find out. It's guided inquiry. That's what basic research is all about. And so the payoff is not always there. So sometimes research projects are carried out and the results are not very productive. If you want to call that wasteful of funding, I wouldn't, because if we hadn't done it, we would not know that that approach would not work.
Dr. Kinberg?
You know, there's a concept called serendipity, and that is the discovery of something great while you were looking for something else.
Mm-hmm.
And that is sometimes how some of the best scientific discoveries are made. You're looking for what happens to microbes at electrodes, and you discover a treatment for cancer.
Well, AZT,
and that actually happens.
AZT is an interesting, is a good example of that, because AZT, which is what was the first HIV drug, was developed as a cancer drug, and it didn't work. So they put it on the shelf for 10 years or 15 years and then tried it on HIV, and they realized that it worked rudimentarily, and they have better drugs today, but that's an example of something that failed but didn't.
Right. And it's that process of learning and trying and continuing to try to understand more. And, you know, the kids in schools today will make the discoveries that will change lives in the future and that will give us new energy sources or a way to store the electricity that we make today. Those kids need that opportunity because we need them to make those discoveries.
Because we're at this juncture in our society and in our world where we have to make some critical decisions, and some of those critical decisions involve science, involve chemistry, and a lot of people, rank-and-file folks, just don't have any affinity for science. They didn't like it in school. They didn't study it. They don't know anything about it, and we're suspicious of science. How do we decouple? How do we unpoliticize these questions, these great questions of our time, in such a way that we can actually get a handle on things and take action on them?
Well, you know, one thing we do here in Charlotte is that we have programs called science cafes where people can actually come and have a discourse with a scientist or an expert in a given field and understand that particular field, whether it has to do with diabetes or whether it has to do with the science of baking. We've done both of those in our science cafes. But, you know, all of us use science more than we think we do. For example, in baking, we use it in our gardens when we try to go organic. We're in our composting. Composting is a science because you don't want to cook it too long or too short a time. So I think we have to help people understand that science is a process and something we do naturally. It's the result of our curiosity and the application of our curiosity. And it's not just something in a dry textbook with a white lab coat and a microscope.
Lee Kinberg is one of the founders of the Charlotte Area Science Network. She's here with Dr. Bassam Shakashiri, president of the American Chemical Society, here on Charlotte Talks on WFAE.
Support comes from WFAE members and Dixon Hughes Goodman LLP, a CPA and advisory firm with an 80-year history of resources and relationships. Headquartered in Charlotte, serving clients in the U.S. and abroad. Details at dhgllp.com.
Just a quick reminder that WFAE's Fall Pledge Drive is a great opportunity for you to show your financial support in favor of Charlotte Talks. I'd really like to encourage you to make a pledge this morning to keep WFAE strong. Call 704-549-9000 or pledge online at WFAE.org. Thanks.
And thank you, Mike. Yes, I'm Roger Sorrow. This is listener-supported WFAE. You know more about what's going on in the world, the nation, and Charlotte because you listen to WFAE and to NPR. And WFAE relies on the money you give to keep quality news on the air. Your membership today will help us continue to provide important services in the months ahead. It's just that simple. The number to call with your pledge is 704-549-9000, or you can give securely online at WFAE.org. With more details, I'm glad to welcome Dale Spear.
And good morning. You know, right now you can take care of something that's both important and easy to do. You can make a contribution to 90.7 WFAE. Your gift will make a difference because it will be used to pay for the news and information you depend on. You'll be on and off the phone in just 2 or 3 minutes after answering just a few basic questions like your name, address, how much you'd like to give. So please get it done now. Get it off your list of things to do. Call 704-549-9000 or pledge online at WFAE.org.
Here at WFAE, we really welcome diverse voices, including artists and musicians and writers and thinkers, and in this case, yes, scientists, chemists. And we think that that's an extremely important part of the variety that we bring out the air with us. By doing it, you'll get a clearer picture of the issues facing our community and the great artistry that you can enjoy in the area and the thinking and the innovation that's going on. We do it because it's important to make connections to you and to be informed. We can only do this kind of programming with your financial support because we're a listener-funded nonprofit. Please call 704-549-9000 with your pledge of support right now, or you can contribute online at WFAE.org.
You know, what does it mean to be a public radio station? Well, it means about 7% of our budget comes from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. That's all we receive from the federal government. More than half of our funding comes from you, listeners who value what we do and make an investment in public radio. That support is critical to our survival. It allows us to pay for NPR, PRI, APM, and PRX programming. It pays for fantastic shows like this one.